I'm Bill Littlefield. This week's Three Stories You Should Know begins with an acknowledgement of loss. Miami Marlins pitcher Jose Fernandez died Sunday in a boating accident. He was only 24 years old. Also on Sunday, golf legend Arnold Palmer passed away. He was 87. Joining me are Will Leach of Sports on Earth and Rachel Bachman of the Wall Street Journal. Welcome back to both of you.
Great to be here, Bill.
Thanks for having me.
Will, why don't you start us off this time?
You know, I'm a professional journalist that writes about a lot of things. And one of the things that people expect you to do, particularly when something as tragic as Jose Fernandez or the death of Arnold Palmer happens, is they expect you to write an obit. And I discovered as I sat down that I just couldn't do it. When we look at someone like Jose Fernandez, what he stood for me, and I think for a lot of baseball fans, was not only this otherworldly talent, but this joy of performance and how exciting that was and how it was moving the game in the new direction. And so I sat down to write that, and then I suddenly felt incredibly cheap, like, oh, this is this guy that represents this thing in baseball that's very important to me. But that's just a public persona that I'm seeing. Writing an obit feels like walking into a room that I wasn't invited to sometimes. And I felt that I felt that a little bit, particularly with the death of Jose Fernandez.
I think, Will, what you wrote about reminded me of something that made me very uncomfortable, and that is these moments when sports writers are called upon to make these, you know, quite sweeping judgments that we're really not equipped to make. And the example I use is the redemption story. You know, a guy's been through rehab or some trauma, or maybe is coming back after committing a crime, and there is sort of a temptation to write that he's a changed man and so on. But of course, we don't really know that. We don't know these guys, really. At the end of the day, we really don't know exactly who they are in their deepest, darkest moments.
Some of the people about whom I write, I know them well as friends, but it's a small number. And writers and fans, as you suggest, really don't know most of the athletes. And it's important to be reminded of that context and perspective and of the complexity of what it's like to be alive on the planet. And I think you did that very, very well.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad I wrote that instead of an obit that I would have very much struggled with. So, yes.
I learned a new word this week, and it's spatting. And it means covering up or painting out the corporate logo on a pair of shoes or a wristband or shirt, whatever. You put a piece of tape over the Nike swoosh, and you have engaged in spatting. And maybe both of you already knew this. I learned the word by reading a piece by William Wilson in Vice Sports. And he has suggested that spatting, or even merely threatening to spat, would be a great way for college athletes to get a better deal from the universities where they play football or basketball. So here's an example. Nike pays the University of Texas so the athletes there wear Nike shoes. And in their contract, Nike has a clause that says they can get a refund of up to $100,000 if the logos on five individual shoes are spatted. The word's not actually in the contract, but the meaning is clear. A bench player who tried this would probably lose his scholarship and his place on the team. But if a number of prominent players, really, you know, guys who were critical to the team, did it, wouldn't the universities and colleges pretty quickly decide to offer better medical coverage and vouchers so the athletes could keep on as students after they were no longer eligible to be athletes or whatever else? Rachel, what do you think? Is this likely to happen soon?
I don't know whether it's likely to happen soon, but I think it's sort of a genius idea. You know, there have been for decades athletes who have been outspoken. When I was covering Oregon State football in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a very outspoken running back named Ken Simonton, who obviously made administrators very uncomfortable with some of the things he said about exploitation of players and so on. They couldn't bench him. He was too good. He was their starting running back. He had 30, 35 carries a game. And that is what it takes. I think if they were to do that, the response could be fairly immediate.
When the Missouri football team said that they weren't going to play unless something was involved with the president of the school, the president resigned. Athletes were almost collectively were like a dog that didn't realize their bark was as loud as it was. The idea that this would immediately, however, go to, okay, well, this will get them better benefits and this will get them better coverage, that is something that the NCAA has been so reluctant to crack the door open for. There would be a debate about it and there would be a discussion, but it feels like something that, frankly, coaches would have to answer for as much as players would, because really a lot of this money is going to coaches.
I don't know. I just thought it was a great idea, and I hope to see it happen at some point. And even if it doesn't, I'm always excited to learn a new word. Rachel, I gather you've been keeping tabs on aspiring ninjas, so have at it.
Yes, well, anyone who is familiar with TV or YouTube has probably heard of the NBC show American Ninja Warrior, wherein people race through these elaborate obstacle courses with feats of gymnastic daring do. The group that perhaps most enthusiastically follows this show is kids who aren't even eligible to compete. But as one guy I talked to said, these courses are sort of like the world's biggest floor is lava game. And I think that's one of the things that kids love about it. You know, as these gym owners who are opening up these ninja gyms all over the country are finding, you know, their best customers are our children. So I'm curious to hear what you guys think.
Well, I can say I have two small boys, and my house is an unofficial version of American Ninja Warrior, mm-hmm. pretty much 24 hours of the day. This is something that is immediately enticing to children. I live in Athens, Georgia, and it's surprising to me the number of children that prefer this to, say, baseball. which is a little disturbing, to be entirely honest. Think of individual sports in this country or even team sports where really the players are encouraged to scream and yell in joy when they've done well. In baseball, that will get you beaned.
Rachel, your story reminded me of a moment many years ago when my older daughter shouted from the backyard, "Hey, Daddy, come look what I can do." And she was hanging by her knees upside down from the top of the jungle gym. And I thought, okay, this is great. We got to put a mattress under the jungle gym now.
I might say that there's something to the idea that so many of our kids' activities now are, frankly, pre-safed. They're almost just not that much fun for them.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the appeal, right? I mean, kids love that there's a little bit of risk, and they even love that it's hard. You know, these kids I watched at this gym where they were trying some of these obstacles for 30, 40 minutes at a time and not getting them. And I think that's really amazing that they are so captivated they'll keep trying.
My guests for this week's Three Stories You Should Know have been Will Leach of Sports on Earth and Rachel Bachman of The Wall Street Journal. Thank you, both of you.
Thanks so much, Bill.
A pleasure as always.